Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at www.starseedgems.com. Our guest tonight is Michael Oreber, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-6 276008. So, Bob, how did your day go today?
Okay, and I know that we were trying to find some time to have these planning sessions on discussing some new directions, you know, for the foundation. One thing I was thinking of today, as some of our listeners are aware, on the first Thursday of every month.
You're talking about the gathering.
Yes. With Tom and Melissa, we have a discussion show. And we've noticed that we usually pick a different topic for each show, and we very much welcome listener call-ins and they add to the program. And we've noticed that whenever we do a show that centers around after-death communication, you know, and ask our listeners to share signs or experiences, we usually, the phones light up, you know, and we have a great many callers. So I was thinking that perhaps we should change some of the format to include more shows of that type. So maybe, you know, perhaps every other show we can invite, because there are many, many listeners and many, many members and many, many experiences, and it's a good thing to share them. So that's one thing that's on the table.
And that goes along with our newfound motivation of promoting the concept that people get out there and talk about their experiences, talk about what's happened to them, particularly in communication with deceased loved ones. And I'm not talking about mediumship. I'm talking, well, I guess I am, because we're all basically mediums. But I'm talking about when we do have some sort of moment or moments when we are connecting to the unseen world. And it is very real. And then, you know, moments later or days later, even weeks later, you start to doubt it. But if everybody's talking about it and it's happening to everybody, then that doubt goes away.
Yeah. Well, I think we all, as a people, many choose to dismiss these things because they just don't have any frame of reference to put it into. But if...
Because nobody's talking
right,
about
if people are sharing, if people are discussing these things, and then something happens that you can't quite explain, now you have some place to put that. Well, wait a second. So-and-so told me about this, or I heard this, and it happened to them, so maybe I'm getting something too, you know. So how many people go through life getting what we would consider to be a tremendous number of signs and synchronicities and so forth, and yet they never notice them because it's just not in their awareness?
Right. But it's interesting. A lot of adults today, in reflecting back on their childhood, all of a sudden remember something that was peculiar to them now, but when it happened to them as a child or as a youngster, even as a teenager, it didn't seem peculiar to them then because it just happened. It just was what it was. But as we get older and we are more indoctrinated into this, you know, judging everybody and judging everything that happens and having to put everything into categories, then it doesn't fit into a category, so therefore it must not have happened.
Right. Yeah, I totally understand. And it could have been a very significant experience that you had, and then you just internally shove it out of your consciousness, you know.
Because right, and we find this happens a lot of times with developing mediums, is that, you know, as a child, they talk to spirit all the time. It was just part of their everyday thing. And then as they got older, they were made to feel peculiar, so they just buried it.
Yeah. Well, if you would like to have more shows that center around the sharing of communication, let us know. Send us an email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. We'd like to hear from you. We value your input. Some of the other things that that we're discussing, we are definitely going to have a great many webinars, online talks by noted people in the field, usually followed by some Q&A. People can participate. We're going to make these available either for free or at a very, you know, nominal cost, and because we want to spread the word and we want people to have access to this knowledge without flying across the country and without spending a tremendous amount of money.
And it just works in with our mission statement. Our mission statement is to educate the public about survival of consciousness. And that's one of the reasons why membership in Forever Family Foundation is free. People think that's peculiar. But if you make people pay to get the information, then you're not educating everybody. You're only educating the people who have the money to pay or who are willing to pay. And we want to reach out to everybody.
Yeah. Another thing that we'd like to do to embrace our community is to have more interactive things. I mean, if you recall, we used to run experiments on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to post the results on the website. And
people enjoyed that.
Yeah, and I want to get back into, now that we have some more time for that, you know, devising some experiments that our listeners can take part in. And also, surveys are very popular. You know, we in the past, we've had surveys on the website that people can participate in, and that's always very popular, and we'd get, you know, sometimes thousands of responses, and with some good data and some interesting things that would come up. We have an upcoming thing. We're not quite ready to announce it yet, but there will be a workbook of sorts that's coming out that will ask our members to contribute to, so we'll be talking about that soon. One thing that we, as we move to more web-based things, we still recognize there are certain things that you cannot do online, and that would be our grief retreats or these afterlife exploration retreats, and we plan to continue with the one that we do have. And
there's one already scheduled for the weekend of July 24th in 2015. And very specially, what we're doing is, for anybody who's willing to sign up for it now, and of course, because we're a not-for-profit, we have a no-refund policy, because once the event is filled, we have to pay the venue. So we do have a no-refund policy, so you have to really figure out if you're going to do this. But if you sign up for it now, you're going to pay the 2014 rates, even though we have to pay 2015 rates to the venue. You're still going to pay 2014 rates if you sign up now, make that commitment now to the grief retreat.
Yeah, and what we want to do is we want to expand that to other areas. This one's going to be in Connecticut, but we want to possibly have one on the West Coast and some other places too. And they're very meaningful. They're small venues.
Not only West Coast, mid-continental, and other continents. I mean, we are huge now, and we're really, really spreading our wings. So doing these things in locations other than the United States now is becoming a reality.
All right, well, we're going to go to a break. Our guest tonight wrote a wonderful book, talk about signs and synchronicities. He has a very unusual and important tale to tell. So we'll be back in a few with our guest, so stay with us.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Michael Orheber. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Bob?
Well, we're very happy to have tonight's guest. Michael Orheber is a graduate of Colorado College, where he majored in music. He spent most of his professional career as creative director at leading communication firms before undertaking the writing of Bava's Gift. It's his first nonfiction book. He lives in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you very much, Bob. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you. So, I mean, I did read the book, and it's a wonderful book some people might think it's a work of fiction, but when you read it, you quickly learn that it's nonfiction. So, but before we get into Bava's Gift, tell us a little bit about your feelings about the afterlife as you were growing up or as a young adult. I mean, was the afterlife something that you contemplated often?
Yeah, I would say, like everybody, it's kind of a universal question. I speak a little in my book about kind of the kind of upbringing I had. I would say that the notion of death, like as a kid, left me with kind of an existential dread that I don't think. I seem to remember, you know, inquiring about it with my parents and not getting a very satisfactory answer. And as a result of that, I think I had a fear of death. I think that, but I don't think it stuck with me per se. But sure, I think it's one of those universal questions, you know, that we all think about.
Yeah. Now, the book centers around, you know, experiences and synchronicities that appear to be orchestrated by a friend of yours that died. His name was Frank. So let's talk a little bit about Frank. I mean, what type of person was he before he passed?
He was a very kind person, a very sort of modest person. I knew him growing up, and we were friends growing up, and then sort of lost touch. He actually was a hairstylist, and he worked at a small salon in New York. And he pretty much enjoyed his work for the time that he was doing it, and he just, you know, enjoyed being around people and. You know, not a very, what you would call, sort of materialistic individual. He was happy leading, you know, relatively simple kind of life, I would say. And he was, both of us had rather troubled backgrounds growing up, and I think that was why we became friends. So essentially, you know, it's our friendship started many, many years ago.
Yeah. And now you took an action. Now I hear often people, when they go to funerals, they'll often place something in the coffin, you know, with the person that's deceased, you know, as a remembrance. You took a very unusual action by placing an object, you know, with Frank. Tell us about what the item was and, you know, how you placed it and why you did it.
Okay, well, you know, I think that essentially goes to the synopsis, or at least, you know, how the story begins. So let me, give me a moment, and I'll try to express that, you know, quickly. Essentially, Frank called me one day and said he wanted to visit with a friend of his. Her name was Jean. And I knew Jean to be a good friend of Frank. They had been friends for years, and I had never met them before. So one day, out of the blue, he said, "I want to visit you, and I'm bringing Jean." And so I thought that was a little unusual, but I said, fine. And they came and stayed over the weekend. And they both live in the New York area, and I drove them back to the station on a Monday before I went to work. And then I got word from Jean a few days later that Frank had suddenly died. And of course, I was terribly saddened and shocked by that, because he was fairly young. And in, you know, very, very good health, it seemed. And so, of course, I was totally shocked at that news and upset. And so that was a Wednesday. And on a Sunday morning, which was the day of his service, I woke up with the realization that Frank had left an object in my house. So he had been visiting on a Wednesday, And I had discovered this object actually was bouncing around the dryer. It was kind of emitting a noise. And he had gone to bed and Gina had gone to bed, and I heard this noise. And when I opened up the dryer, it was a marble. But in actuality, it was a little more than a marble to Frank. It was kind of talismanic, because it actually kind of looked more like a sort of a stone or a crystal, kind of a crystal stone. It had that aspect to it, but it was definitely the size of a marble. So anyway, when I found it, I had put it in a cup and totally forgot to return it to him that Monday when they went back to New York. And so subsequently, you know, when I woke up that day of the service, a Sunday, I realized that, wait, the marble's still there, or figured it would still be there. And I went to check, and sure enough, it was there. So I decided to return it to him. And I had written a tribute, and I decided to wrap the marble in the tribute. And I had the notion to, you know, simply give it back to him because, you know, it was important to him. He, if you knew him, you knew, you know, the way he found it was interesting, and you know, so it was something he cared about. And I figured, you know, let me return it to him. And as I was wrapping it, I had this kind of notion, if you will. I'm not exactly sure where it came from, but I wrote at the top of the tribute, and I wrote a little note in hand, and I said, if you're ever around, toss this back. And so I guess my thinking kind of was, well, you know, he's a dear friend. He was one of those people that, you know, when you have, you know, a really, you know, special, you know, kind of friend that almost would do anything for you. You know, if you said, hey, meet me on the other side of the world at, you know, 12 o'clock on Tuesday, he would do his best to get there, you know. So we're all lucky to have, you know, people like that in our lives. So I figured, well, you know, if anyone could return it, it would be him. So I picked up some friends in New York on the way to the funeral home, and we got there a little early, and I returned the marble to him. I placed it at, you know, in the viewing, I placed it in the suit pocket, and then we went out and had dinner with some friends after, and I really did not think about it after that. I mean, I figured, you know, my job was done. And so the day of his funeral was the next day. He was in the Navy Reserves, and he was a veteran, and he was being buried in a veteran cemetery way out on Long Island. And when I was driving back that afternoon, I called Jean, she is the woman who I had just met, right? So I had just met her that weekend, and I called her up to, you know, just to say hello. She couldn't make it to the funeral, so I wanted to give her a ring. And so she had some pretty astounding news. When she got home that Sunday night, there was a marble waiting for her on her mat right in front of her door. It was there, very similar to Frank's, and it was waiting for her right at the entrance to her brownstone. When I got that news, it was astounding. It was as if, you know, it's very hard to describe. I do describe the experience in my book, but it literally was like having the rug pulled out from under you. It was kind of like all my conceptions, all my notions about the world and reality and, you know, virtually everything was kind of overturned.
Yeah.
And subsequently, people would hear the story, and as my book speaks to this, subsequently I would tell the story or somebody would hear about the story, and many people would start finding marbles out of the blue in all sorts of situations. And so they would be friends, they would be friends of friends, and all of a sudden, and it continues to this day, this phenomenon, if you will, of people finding these sort of these stones, and typically they represent, you know, someone may be going through some sort of crisis. It could be a health crisis, it could be a financial crisis, it could be a personal crisis, and what's very interesting is they seem to arrive at a time when people are in need of some sort of message, if you will.
Right. So they seem to have a purpose, as if it was orchestrated.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
What I find so interesting is that although it was not your primary motivation, I mean, probably your primary motivation was just returning a treasured item to your friend, but in the back of your mind,
right,
you wanted to do an experiment, which is intriguing to me. And you know, the marble is, I mean, I don't remember the last time that I saw a marble. It's not something that you come across every day, which makes the sign more significant. You know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, may find pennies in the street, but, you know, marbles, not so much. So I think the fact that you asked and then received, and not only received, but immediately, I can understand why that shook your world.
absolutely. I think I would say you could describe me as sort of a very left-brain, sort of analytical person. Not skeptical, but, you know, open. And so in my mind, if you will, this was as true and legitimate an experiment as you know, Niels Bohr or you know, anybody could have created. It, to me, the validity, at least in my mind, right, this experiment had complete and utter validity to it, because essentially I returned an object and I said, if you're around, toss it back. And sure enough, it came back and continues to come back in many ways. And so, as you know, in my book, I examine, I'm telling the story, and even to this day, you know, people are calling me and writing me with, you know, finding these things, these objects. But I kind of felt the need to kind of look for, you know, substantiation or validation. And, you know, like, how could this be? You know, how can this happen? And so, really, for me, raised a lot of questions about the nature of the universe, the nature of how things emerge in the universe, and our very identity and place in the universe, and all those things. In not a very long book, I try to address. Not gratuitously, but because those issues are, I think, directly touched by the story.
Yeah, and you actually, as many of us do, I mean, you were seeking some answers from science, and it was kind of interesting and somewhat amusing when you discovered that Leibniz, the person that was the first to investigate you know, the binary system, or maybe to conceive the idea of a digital computer. What did he use? He used marbles, right?
He didn't actually build it, but he described it, and he certainly conceived it, and he had the notion, you know, to use marbles.
Yeah. How would your close friends, I mean, were they open to this sort of thing from the start? Or, I mean, did you find some of your friends to be closed-minded or refuse to accept what you were talking about, or was everybody open?
I think there's sort of a continuum with respect to that. I think some people were very open and some people were utterly shocked, almost offended. You know, I speak to that in book.
Right.
So I think there's, you know, definitely a continuum along those lines.
I was saying another thing that I found interesting in the book is you were battling, you know, with your own, trying to make sense out of it at all and find an underlying reason. You started to contemplate what happens to people who receive these powerful signs but choose to ignore them or dismiss them. You even wondered, maybe if you dismiss it, could that actually result in have a negative effect? I think that there are a great many people among us that continue to dismiss these things and can refuse to acknowledge it. If we can't explain it in physical terms, they won't acknowledge it. That's a battle that I'm sure you've come across.
No question. I would say that we're all suffering when we don't recognize that the universe is speaking to us. You know, I didn't write the book to, as you know, sort of create sort of any sort of neon sign. I mean, I was really telling a story, but if I'm gonna sort of, I don't mean to sound preachy, but there's no question that we suffer individually and universally when we don't recognize the fundamental nature that the nature of reality is communication, that the world is essentially always talking to us. And when we don't listen, we suffer. So in that sense, my book is really, it's not so much about a friend's passing, which of course it is, but it's more about his confirmation of the continuation of consciousness and the very nature of communication. And so, yes, I mean, I think when we don't listen, we suffer. And you know, obviously we're at a state in the universe when we need to start listening. Unfortunately, many people aren't.
Well, you, like many people, I mean, you describe you were looking for a way not to believe at the beginning, and of course, eventually came full circle. You, in the book, and I think this is a quote, if I get it right, you said that you talk about a place where coincidence abandons any obligation to probability and becomes part of another reality, a reality that only the heart can fathom. So do you believe that one can only reach this state of knowing and understanding through personal experience? I mean, must one have some sort of after-death communication or personal experience to reach that state of mind where they know instead of hope?
I would say that's, at some level, that's true, because, you know, if it was the case that everyone could learn from somebody else's experience, or everyone could sort of integrate insights that have already been sort of established, then we would probably be much further along. But the reality is that At the level of the individual, you do have to experience some, something has to galvanize that. There has to be some sort of catalyst that, you know, that occurs. It's, my book starts off rather humorously, at least, you know, to me it is, is my friend, Frank, grew up thinking he was Italian, and then he discovered that he wasn't Italian. Imagine that. I mean, he thought he had a different father, and he thought he was Italian, and he identified with all things Italian. And then one day he finds, wow, he's not Italian. And I think that the notion of identity and how we have these false notions of ourselves is part of the story. And those false notions don't allow us to see, you know, what may be operating at a greater level. And that's why death is so difficult, because it challenges, it's a direct affront to our, that very notion of ourself, this sense of permanence around our identity, around who we are. And right. All of a sudden, someone dies, and that whole reality is impacted.
Absolutely.
So in that, in that respect, I think, you know, death is obviously a wake-up call for us.
Right, and it's usually, as you say, that very often that's the trigger, that the trauma is what triggers us to engage in this exploration. We're going to have to go to a
break.
When we come back, we're going to be talking more about this unseen world with our guest, Michael Orheber, and so stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Michael Orheber. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems at www.starseedgems.com. And if you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to the show, it's time for a few foundation updates for our listeners. First, we want to let you know that you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, without sending us a single pretty penny. When shopping on the Internet, think of us before you go to Amazon.com, and instead go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and use the Amazon link to get to Amazon. Don't worry, there's a link on every page of our website. And if you add that one simple step to your shopping, particularly during this holiday season, a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart will generate a donation from Amazon to us. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? Well, that's not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation, again, without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. Sign up with iGive. It's free. And please name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. And just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the Internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,500 online stores that you're already shopping in. Like maybe Cheap Tickets or drugstore.com. How about Hanes or Home Depot? Or Travelocity and Urban Outfitters, Vistaprint, Zales. The list goes on. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holidays Past raffle is up. You can win one of five medium readings. The drawing is just in a few days on December 23rd. So get your entries in. You can win up to five medium readings. The mediums in this raffle are Lynn LeClaire, Joanne Gerber, Dave Campbell, Eliza Ray, and Nancy Marlowe. It's only $5 a chance. Our Holidays Past events are left in four more locations before the end of the year. Bethel, Connecticut with Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero. Plainview, New York with Angelina Diana is sold out. Pompton Lakes, New Jersey with Janet Nohavik and Joseph Scheel. And Fort Myers, Florida, again with Angelina. And don't forget to mark your calendars for the annual grief retreat in Chester, Connecticut, this July 24th to 26th in 2015. And visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org for all the event links, information, and registration. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with the author of Baba's Gift, Michael Orheber. It's Baba's Gift, Awakening to the Impossible. There is a link I'll mention on our website, an Amazon link for the book. So, Michael, so you reached somewhat of a crossroads. I mean, you had all these experiences. You had corroboration from your friends. You have all this information that you learned that defied logic. And then you had a choice. I mean, you could either keep it to yourself or you could take some action. So what did you decide to do?
Well, the experience from when I had sort of the revelation, if you will, that things are not what we typically think they are, became pretty consuming for me, particularly because the finds, the phenomenon kept going on. It wasn't, if it was sort of a one and done event, if it had just happened to me, I never would have even considered, you know, putting in the effort to write a story about it. But it kept occurring. In fact, I speak in the book, there were something like 17 people over the course of roughly six months across the country in different stratas of life, different religions, all of them finding these objects. And it just became kind of this very perplexing, and it just seemed to cry out for an exploration. And it didn't seem like I could address this sort of part-time. It became so consuming that I felt that I couldn't sort of do this halfway. And so I resigned my job, and I pretty much changed my life completely to explore this phenomena. Mm. And that's what happened.
Yeah. So I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but I'm going to ask it anyways. What do you think would have happened if only you were receiving these marbles? Like, you know, no corroboration from others, none of your friends ever got them, but it was just you.
That's what I mentioned. I never would have written a book about it. I would have, it would have been sort of more of a personal reality. It certainly would have changed me, I believe. But I never would have, embarked on the, writing a story about it. Look, there's plenty of books in the world, right? And so do we really... I'm a reader, so the notion that do we really need another story? I had to think about that. It seems to me if you're going to put something on the page, it needs to be worthwhile, and make the commitment to doing that. So I know I never would have embarked on that kind of effort if it had just occurred to me.
Right. So, I mean, the fact that they were, multiple events that seemed to be emanating from the same source or force, I mean, that added, in my view, I'm sure in yours too, a tremendous amount of significance to it, more than a sole personal experience, something bigger.
Absolutely.
Than Phil.
Well, keep in mind my position for... longer than I care to admit, has been in the communication business. And so here to me is a communication that's utterly profound, more profound than any I'd ever seen. And so how can I not respect it and consider it? obviously the medium, the means of communication, a marble, that in itself, obviously, is resonant with a lot of different meanings, and so part of the story is unraveling that message, if you will,
right.
trying to piece it together, and really spending a long time, considering the different aspects of it.
So when Einstein said that God doesn't play dice, maybe he was thinking that God plays marbles.
I think play is part of the universe. I think Arthur Young is a brilliant writer who was a scientist and inventor of the Bell helicopter, an incredible man. He wrote a lot about process. About sort of emergent theory, and he speaks a lot about play, and I think that as a creative person, play is part of what you do, and I think play is fundamental to reality, and so what better metaphor for that notion than a marble?
Yeah. Well, you also said in the book that. When it comes to science, there is no hierarchy, so
when you said that, you were talking about, you know, whether one sign is more significant than others, or
yeah. Well, I think the point there is that everything's communication based, and the hierarchy really depends on the meaning that you ascribe to something. So it may have, you know, if it has more meaning or significance to you, you would obviously place that above some other kind of, say, message. But essentially, everything fundamentally is built on communication. And that was, you know, John Wheeler's insight when he said it from bit, which, you know, he was a professor of physics at Princeton. And that was a famous line. That was one of his famous, you know, sayings. And that, I think, is absolutely true. That's like it from bit, essentially meaning the world is fundamentally based on communication. That the very bits and bytes of at the smallest level are, it's about communication.
And our thoughts are information as well. So
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, a consciousness is essentially information based. It's all and so then that raises other. I mean, you know, it's sort of like you start, to me, there's obviously, and, you know, many, many questions that are raised by this, but there are a few questions that are answered. There are probably many more questions raised, but the notion of consciousness continuing in some level, at some level, there is no doubt about that. It's, you know, I think that's a subject that we should put to rest. There can be no doubt about that, and the work of, you know, Brendan Bobbs at Pear at Princeton, I mean, they have 30 years of research showing the impact of consciousness on reality. I mean, that's fundamental, right, to, you know, to science since the 30s.
Yeah.
So we it's time to move on from that, I think. It's time to say, okay, if that's true, what does that mean and how do we need to live?
Yeah.
I would guess you feel the same
way. Well, yeah, and I mean, I don't know if we could talk about this for hours, and unfortunately we're running out of time, but I think one of the values, you mentioned Brenda Dunn and Robert Jen. There's a very interesting epilogue in the back of your book, which we don't have time to get into, but I think our readers will be fascinated with that. And one of the reasons that kind of work is so important is that it lays the foundation. Once we show that our mind or our consciousness can act independently of the brain, that opens up the door to the reality of survival, you know. So we definitely owe a great tribute and thanks to our scientists. We have been talking with Michael Erheber. The book is called Baba's Gift, Awakening to the Impossible. Thank you so much for being with us, Michael. I hope we can continue this conversation some other time. And best of luck with the book.
It's been a pleasure, Bob. Thank you for having me.
And thanks. Take care. Have a good holiday season. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. Thanks, Sarah. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Philip McPhee, Doug Berry, Tim Donahue, Tom Donahue, Barbara Russell, Wendy Lippo, Eileen Lafada, Patty Potter, Michael Tim, Lynn Austin, Glenna Irwin, Stanley Mullen, Tanya Cash, Andy O'Brien, Johnny Jackson, Henry Stark, David Mello, Karen, Brian, Richard, Andrea, Tracy Bray, Donna Mello, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel Skandarian, Jeanette Davies, Marian Pierschka, Julie Beischel, Barbara Patillo, Ann Hutchinson, David Haith, Rita Springer, Mark Barron, Vicki Steffi, Jean Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Eddie Rowell, James Rafferty, Arthur and Bernice Goforth. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we'd like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.